Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 420. In this episode, Scott talks with Denise Jacobs about hacking the creative mind.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here in Orlando, Florida at the Angle Brackets Conference, and I've just come out of Denise Jacobs' creativity presentation. What was the title of your presentation?
It was called The Art of Disciplined Creativity.
I like that, because for me, creative means a little kind of, and with all due respect, a little kind of woo-woo, you know?
Like loosey-goosey, just like waiting for inspiration.
Yeah. But you said disciplined creativity, and that's why you got a room of programmers.
Exactly.
To sit and listen to a creativity talk, and people kept coming up afterwards, and like, it was eye-opening.
It was great.
Disciplined creativity, what is that?
Well, I like to think of creativity as this thing that, you know, a lot of people have this concept that it is this loosey-goosey, you know, wait for inspiration, very free-flowing, nebulous, tenuous kind of process. And really, when you think about it, most people who are creatives, professional creatives, most of the time, what comes to mind are artists and musicians and, even I like to think, I liken people who are athletes and like martial artists and things like that. All of these people have to do their creative discipline or have to do their discipline regularly. Like that's why it's a discipline, right? Mm. It's not like a painter, like Picasso, for example, didn't just paint when he felt like it. He painted every day, right? A musician goes into the studio every day. They don't just like, oh, I just got a song. They go and they practice. And if they don't have a song, then they practice on things that they do have. Right.
But from my perspective as a reasonably non-creative person, I just assume that like Rihanna just hangs out and is awesome and spends money, right? And then has an idea and then rushes in. I assume that that's how it works.
And I would argue that that's probably not how it works, right? Like, or the people who, in her band, or if she's writing the music herself or the songs herself, or the people who are writing the songs for her, they're probably there with a little tiny, you know, tidbit of an idea, and then they're working the idea. They're going in and they're gathering things and they're playing with it and they're really kind of honing the idea. So similarly, for people who are programmers, people who are doing things that most people would consider more logical or analytical things, like scientists and whatnot, same thing. You're sitting down at the computer, you're trying to work the problem, you're trying to find a solution, you're putting things together. And then you do that regularly, and that's how you become a really good programmer. That's how you become a really good developer, is that you are constantly pulling in different kinds of modalities, different kinds of, you know, you really understand your language, and then you can really work the problem and find solutions through that. So, back to your original question, then the discipline is that showing up every day, that kind of commitment to it, and that kind of exercising basically your kind of creativity muscles and exercising those skills so that you get to a place where you can be like the Michael Jordan of...
Well, like I always think of Prince, right?
Prince.
There's like this legend that Prince has like 1,000 songs that he's written that he hasn't given anyone yet. And they're just, he's just sitting on them.
Just chilling. Right. Yeah. And he probably has 1,000 more that come to him, you know, depending on who inspires him or what inspires him at the time. Like, I remember, there was the one, I don't remember which song it was, but there's one song that has when he had the baby and there was like the baby's heartbeat in the background. And I mean,
it's inspired,
right? It's inspired. Same thing. Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder, totally inspired by his daughter when his daughter was born. And like, tons of people, when they become parents, for example, have those kinds of things.
But I'm hearing you say that when the inspiration comes, if you haven't got the muscle ready to answer that inspiration and make it happen, then that's going to be a problem.
Well, I think that it is. It's kind of the same thing if you decide all of a sudden you want to, like, you know, run a marathon, but you've been sitting on the couch chilling watching Scandal or something.
So you've been to my house.
What? I just read your blog.
that's a really good analogy, though.
Right.
Like, I may very well have the inspiration to run a marathon.
Right.
Or walk a half marathon. But yeah, if you're right, if I'm not exercising, it's not going to happen.
But the thing is that you can easily change that, right? Like, you know, there's the couch to 5K, you know, website and everything. I mean, there's different ways. It's not like you're going to get up and you're going to start running, but you do start instilling the practice and you make it regular and you make it a habit. And then the next thing you know, you are running 5K, you're running 10K, you're running a half marathon, you're running a full marathon.
So how do I couch to 5K the
creativity?
Mind?
I love that.
You want to use that?
No, I love that.
That's great.
So
I trademarked that just now.
I know, right? You're like, and I get kickbacks for that. Thank you very much.
Make that happen. By the time we publish that, I expect a blog post from you on couch to 5K right. The creative mind.
I love that, though. It's great. I'm so going to use that. So couch to 5K for creativity. So basically, one of the things that I talk about in my presentations and also in my workshop, I have two workshops that I do, one called Get Unblocked and another one called Hacking the Creative Brain, more for people like programmers and developers. But one of the things that I talk about is, like, first you have to know what it is, be aware of the things you need to eliminate. So, for example, if you were couch to 5K, right? The couch to 5K to creativity is like, okay, well, you're not going to want to sit on the couch and watch TV all night if you want to start running a marathon, right? Same thing with creativity. There are things that you're going to have to give up. You're probably going to have to give up the potato chips. You're probably going to have to give up the sodas. So similarly, what I recommend with people is to start actually having some awareness about their habits. How are they spending their time? How are they managing or just being wrapped up in distractions, multitasking, communication addiction, things like that. Being aware of that so that you can start changing your behaviors around those things and start eliminating them so that that's not taking up your time. Then to start replacing those habits with ways of managing time better so that you can get things off of your plate, kind of get the things done that need to get done so that you can start having more free time that will be kind of devoted towards creative pursuits or creative thinking. I actually have a talk that's called White Space Creativity that talks about a lot of the things of not doing. A lot of what happens with creativity is not when you're actually sitting down and concentrating, but it's the times between when you're doing stuff, right? It's when you're taking the walk, when you're taking the shower, when you're about to go to sleep.
So it's quieting the mind.
And so a lot of the process is to start creating the habit of quieting the mind, right? And that again also is discipline, right? A lot of meditation practices and whatnot have to do with, you know, slowing down thoughts, dismissing thoughts so that your brain just has that kind of free space.
Is that a known thing? Is there science behind the idea that a quiet mind is one that is open to inspiration?
Absolutely.
Because in my industry, everyone is – when you were in my industry, you were CSS and design and web programmer until you moved into the creativity space. So you know this as much as anyone that we're habitually busy, indiscriminately busy. It's hard for inspiration to find its way in when you're pulling to refresh.
Always.
Yeah.
And when you're being impatient when the refresh takes too long, like, what's wrong with this thing? You're pressing the button. And then that gets you tense and everything. But there's a lot of studies, a lot of, support and,
is there science behind this?
There's a lot of science. Thank you. That's the word I was
like
looking for.
Like your brain waves need to be in a certain way.
Yeah, your brain waves, the different brain wave modes, alpha brain wave mode, which is kind of the mode that your brain goes into before you're going to sleep, when you're in the shower, when you're taking a nice relaxed walk, sometimes when you're like playing with a pet, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That has actually been proven to be, I like to call it the gateway to creativity, but that's usually what people refer to as the creative mind. And that sort of thing is that, but it's also been shown that, like, actually, in terms of on a neurological level, like the electric signals that go on in your brain actually flow more freely, when your brain is in alpha brain wave mode, when your brain is relaxed.
So that is relaxation, is the layman's term of that when you're in alpha brain?
It's like
chill.
I think it's not so much chill. It's more of being able to kind of regulate your brain, right? Like you can be deeply immersed in something and mm-hmm. you can still have your brain can still be relaxed, right? Like your brain can be working and be processing things, but it can still be relaxed.
Well, like I think of things like woodworking, I find being like more relaxing than programming. Like I don't necessarily think of programming as being a relaxing.
Right. But for some people, I actually know that some people do program and it's kind of relaxing for them. Their brain gets into a flow state, for example, and then the ideas and everything are just really coming to you easily. Woodworking happens that way too, but you're still problem solving during woodworking, right? Like even though it's not the same as, you know, trying to write a program or trying to write an application, you are trying to accomplish something and you do have a certain set of tasks and you do need to know kind of the limits and the parameters of what you're doing within that task set.
Yep, that's true.
And that's true of anything, right? But that's what kind of mastery is kind of knowing the kind of range of all the things that can happen and then knowing kind of having the trust or the faith that you know how to deal with anything that comes up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's in a lot of ways, that's creativity. That's actually creative confidence is one of the things is knowing that if you get into a situation, David Kelly wrote a book, David and his brother, Tom Kelly wrote a book called Creative Confidence. And they basically talk about this whole process, but that creative confidence is this capacity that you know that if you come up in a situation where you need to come up with a solution, that you have a methodology and a set of tools and a practice that will enable you to come up with something that you haven't come up with before and nobody else has come up with before.
I see. So if you're a beginning violinist, you're going to be struggling with the actual movement of your hands and your brain isn't freed up for creativity. But if you've done your 10,000 hours.
Right.
That part of your brain is now freed up.
Exactly. And then you can start to play with the limitations. You can play, work within the constraints, right? Mm-hmm. Like there is a limited number of ways that your fingers can move. Mm-hmm. But within that limited number of ways, there's kind of almost like infinite ways that the notes can combine and how they can work together. And that's when people have the mastery. That's when they get into flow. That's when they feel like they've been taken over and they're just kind of a channel a lot of times for creativity and creative ideas.
That's interesting. You know, it makes me think about the movement towards doing polyglot programming. A lot of people are saying you need to learn more than one language. You got to exercise that brain. Like I'm guilty of really focusing on C# as my favorite language. Mm-hmm. But other people are saying try to learn a new language mm-hmm. every year. I tried that for a while.
Mm-hmm. How'd that work out for you?
It was hard.
Really? What was hard? What was the hard part about it?
It was like writing with your non-dominant hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like I can do it,
right.
But it wasn't fun.
And it wasn't, and it didn't flow.
Well, it's almost like, you know, like, here, go and write Dvorak on your keyboard now. It's just like, everyone swears, you got to do it for 2 weeks, and then you're going to be a faster typist, but you got to make it for those 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I assume that getting my brain in a creative mode is not going to happen overnight.
It doesn't happen overnight, but here's the thing that I often like to kind of, you know, I like to encourage people with around creativity. We're all born creative. We come out of the box creative, right? Like look at any child and you will see any child doing something completely innovative or creative, making something out of nothing. Imaginary friends, playing games that never been played before, you know, being able to make use of the things around them to make something fun and interesting. Mm-hmm. seeing the world through different eyes and through, you know, through different, in different ways. We all are born that way. We get it taught out of us. We become like kind of already intact and we get broken, right? Mm. So this is kind of, I always tell people, you've already got this. You're just getting back in touch with it, right? So getting kind of into that mode is, first of all, I think it's easier when you realize you've already been there and you're just getting back to something that was already there. Okay. Number one. And then number two, when you realize that it also has to do with, it's not pushing for something or forcing for something. It's more of getting rid of things. It's more of getting things out of the way so that this natural flow process can happen. It's almost as if, you know, your creativity has been dammed by like beavers. You know, like there's a beaver's dam in the path of this,
preventing the flow,
this free flowing creek, right? Mm-hmm. And if you get rid of the dam, then you can get the dam unblocked, basically, then you can start to have creativity flow.
Well, see, that's a really interesting way to look at it. And that kind of throws a wrench in my violinist analogy, because in that example, you're trying to learn skills you do not have. But what you're describing is you just need to chip away at these bad habits that you've learned and get back to that childlike state.
But the thing is that it's within that, right? It's kind of within building these skills. It's kind of a strange kind of paradox in a way, right? Like a violinist is not going to just pick up a violin and just know how to do all of the movements and know how to hold the bow and how mm-hmm. to, you know, stroke the string in a certain way. Like you have to learn all of that. Those are skills too, but it's kind of a combination of these skills plus this kind of innate creative ability. Once the skill level gets to a certain point, then that innate creativity can start flowing. Mm-hmm. But you do have to build up the skills. Like the same thing I always, like I was talking about Michael Jordan or LeBron James or, you know, any, you know, put in any great basketball player, any great athlete, mm-hmm. I mean, Tiger Woods, whatever. Like these people had to practice over, started at a very young age and right. every day practicing and practicing. But then after a certain point, when it stops being so conscious, such conscious effort, then that kind of, you know, secondary, not actually, it's kind of like the subconscious, like that can take over and then the creativity can start flowing, mm-hmm. right? There's this great book that I've been reading. I've been recommending it to everybody because I just love it. It's called The Inner Game of Work, and it's by Timothy Galloway. And he talks about how what ends up happening a lot of times, he actually originally was a tennis instructor, and then he started applying his inner game of tennis to work and other things. And one of the things that he says is there's, you kind of have like a self one, which is like the critical self and the teaching self and everything. And then you have the self two, which is like the subconscious, which sees everything, knows everything, gets everything all the time. And what happens a lot of times is when you're trying to do something, the self one takes over and starts criticizing and doing this and stuff. Mm-hmm. And self two knows exactly what to do.
Right.
So if you can get that self one to kind of quiet down and shut up, and you can think that self one is also your critical mind, whatever. And then self two is this kind of subconscious, kind of creative place. Mm-hmm. If you can get self one to shut up and let self two do its thing, then you can actually do awesome things.
So self number one, in using his terms,
yeah.
is the one that says you're an imposter,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's going to figure out that you don't belong here.
Right. And you don't know what you're doing and you're doing it wrong. And how could you? And you made a mistake and oh my God. And Jesus. Oh, blah. You know, that's self one, right? Now just do it faster, harder, higher.
Well, and this is with the idea that somehow we can just muscle our way through this stuff. You know, I talk about this in my productivity talk, the idea that hope is not a strategy.
Right. Hope is not a strategy. But practice is, mm-hmm. right? Showing up is. And even practicing shutting that self one up, you know, practicing shutting up that critical mind. And that's actually another thing that I really put a lot of focus on. I wrote an article on A List Apart a couple of years back called Banishing Your Inner Critic. Mm-hmm. And I talk about I give some very good, in my opinion. Of course, I'm biased, right?
Yeah, well, he wrote it.
What can I say? But I give some, you know, some really good, solid advice and suggestions on how you can actually deal with your inner critic and deal with those inner critical voices to kind of shut them up so that you can create more and do more.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people don't recognize that this is the case, that it is that exists. Like when I talked, I did a show with a very famous programmer named John Skeet, who is number one on Stack Overflow.
Nice.
Number one. And we had an entire show about how we both feel like phonies. And everyone's like, that's insane. I'm like, everyone feels like that. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that everyone, the president, should feel like that because it should be a motivating. It shouldn't be an oppressive thing. It should be acknowledge it, recognize it, store it, and then use it to push you forward.
Well, but I think what ends up happening is that it becomes paralyzing. Right. For a lot of people, I think for most people, sometimes it becomes a motivating factor and other times it becomes an absolutely paralyzing factor. And for me, like, that's what I'm most concerned with, because that's what I've experienced in my life. When I have those moments where I'm like, oh my God, somebody's going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. I'm trying to figure this all out. And that means I should stop instead of me somehow meaning. That means I should push forward. I should keep going, or should learn more and ask more. I have. I'm a recovering perfectionist, and the recovery process is bumpy.
Yeah. Well, I assume you're always a perfectionist. You can't stop that. You just have to.
I think some of it is it's learned habits, right? And so I'm trying to unlearn some of those habits, or most of them. And one of the things about being a perfectionist is that, you know, everything has to, you have to do everything perfectly the first time. Like, there's no room for mistakes. There's no room for, like, I didn't do it right and that's okay. It's like, how could you have not known that?
I did this when I was in elementary school. Everyone's like, you know, well, you have to write a draft and then you revise the draft. Like, no, you just write it right the first time.
Right.
Like, who writes a first draft? What's that?
I remember the first time I found a typo in a book. And I was mortified. I was like, no, but books are perfect. I mean, they're printed and they're perfect. I couldn't believe that there would be a book that would have a typographic error in it. And after that, I was just like, wow. I mean, it really changed how I perceived the world, you know? But I mean, you could take that and apply it to your own life and think, I can't make any mistakes. But then you can't move forward, right? Mm-hmm. If you just think that it's always somebody's going to find you out. If you make a mistake, somebody's going to find you out. And so, yeah, all of those problems for creativity, right? Because part of creativity is the process of discovery, is the process of finding things out, is the process of playing with things and curiosity and seeing what happens next and how does this work together? And these two things have never been associated before. What happens when we do this? And if you're so concerned with failure or looking bad or having somebody call you out as an imposter or something, you're never going to be able to get anything done with that stuff.
That idea of looking bad, that's a really important one. I try to get people involved in open source and trying to plug things together, taking two things and plugging them together. And it always seems like we see projects that, you know, someone took this and that, they had a Nintendo emulator and a JavaScript and it worked. It's like, that's amazing. But we didn't see the 20 failures behind that, that person didn't put out into the world. We just see the one amazing thing and then we feel inadequate.
Right.
I think that people should lean into that.
Right.
Be a public failure.
Right. And I agree with you. And I was going to say that another part of the inner critic and imposter syndrome and all that stuff is comparing yourself to other people, comparing your process to somebody's finished product and somehow finding yourself, you know, unworthy or like falling short because you're comparing all of the things that you've gone through and all the quote failures and all of the things that didn't quite work. And yet you're looking at this, the other person had the whole exact same thing, right?
One of the things, though, that you said at the beginning and you mentioned also about sports is this idea of showing up and discipline. And that reminds me of the things that I talk about in productivity, that you need to be productive by getting the aspects of your life that are not making good use of time.
Right.
In order to free up time to be creative.
Right. Or be productive is like your main focus, right? Yes, to be creative, I feel like productivity and creativity actually do go hand in hand, right? They do have this relationship with each other. And like you, I actually promote a lot of productivity practices in order to help people get all of that stuff off of their plate that's been taking up mental space, right? In order for them to be able to devote that mental space towards something that's going to be much more fulfilling, like being creative in some way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. right? And I don't mean, when I say being creative, I don't mean that all of a sudden you're going to paint a tableau or, you know, write an oeuvre or, you know, write the next great American novel. I mean, being creative could be it could be developing an app. I mean,
or solving a problem at work.
It could be solving a problem at work. It could be creating a meetup. It could be creating a social environment. It could be
making.
It's making. It's creating something that has never, that didn't exist before, and bringing it into existence. Mm-hmm. Whatever that thing is, right? So yeah, I think it is really important to be able to get a handle on time, to be really cognizant of the places where you're spending time so that you can start making choices on, do I want to spend time on this or do I want to spend time on that?
Exactly.
Right. And you can start, the more aware you are and the more you're kind of in control of how that's working, the more then you can start spending your time on the things that actually really feed and nourish you.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a thing go on around the internet recently, which was basically a clock in the shape of a pie chart. And it encouraged you to just shade in, work time, personal time, mm-hmm. family time. Mm-hmm. So just get a sense of what is the pie chart of your 24-hour day look like? Mm-hmm. And if there's things you can do that are no fun, or rote things, or things you combine, like working out, that could be a thing that you need to do, and TV, something that you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. Can you work out and watch TV at the same time, and then free up that pie chart for just downtime? Mm-hmm. Scheduled, doing nothing time, meditation. I know you're really big into meditation and yoga.
I am really big into meditation. But the thing that's the irony of it is that I think in a lot of ways people keep themselves occupied because they're frightened of what will happen if they don't, right?
Brain just exploded. You're right? Absolutely right. Yeah.
Right. And
what
it's
would
like,
I do with the downtime?
What would I do with the downtime? And I don't think a lot of people actually think about what is meaningful in their lives and how they actually want to contribute to the world, right? It's much easier to think, got to make the donuts, got to just go to work, right?
Yeah, that's a great reference. I don't think that necessarily everyone who's not from the States will get that, but there was this man in the commercials in the 70s and 80s who would wake up every morning and he'd look at his alarm and he'd go, time to make the donuts. And I think we all feel like that sometimes in our jobs.
Yeah, sometimes. But I feel like when you start doing things that are more meaningful, then you don't feel like it's time to make the donuts, right? You don't feel like, okay, I just got to go and put in my time. And then later on, you know, there's this little meme that's been going around Facebook and the web and everything. And it's really more focused for the United States, but that it says, you know, are you getting up to go to work at the job so that you can pay for the house and drive the car that you never drive, that you're never in because you're at the job, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And when you start doing things that are laden with meaning and my main thrust and my main kind of goal with getting people focused and in touch with their creativity again is because when you do creative pursuits, when you express your creativity, that a lot of times is when you start to get in touch with meaning. That's when you start to get in touch with joy. That's when you start to get in touch with your passion and feeling actually really alive. And that's really what I'm trying to get people in touch with. And when you're feeling alive and you're feeling passion, then you also, a lot of times, want to make something, you want to make a difference, right? You want to make something that's meaningful, that touches other people and stuff. And that's really what I'm working to get people to do and working people to get in touch with, so that they have more meaningful, kind of fulfilled lives for themselves, and that they're probably making a positive difference in other people's lives as well.
Definitely. Hmm. And where can people learn about you and read about your articles and see videos of you online? DeniseJacobs.com.
You can go to DeniseJacobs.com. I am just actually putting on a new section of my website, which is going to be denisejacobs.com/videos. And you can go to denisejacobs.com/writing for books that I've written, articles that I've written, and things that are coming up.
Very cool. And then you also are available to do workshops and come to corporations and things like that and talk about creativity.
Absolutely. And come and do talks at your conferences as well.
You're going to be at in Oslo, are you not?
I'm going to be at NDC Oslo in June, and I actually will be doing my Hacking the Creative Brain workshop on June 3rd, I believe. So if you're interested, you should check that out. I'll also, after Oslo, I'll be in Poland and Krakow at the 33rd Degree Conference. And then got some more conferences coming up in August and September. So it's going to be a nice busy year.
Very cool. Congratulations. Yeah. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.